Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and it is the 27th of December 2013 and episode 173 of the podcast. So I hope you all had a happy Christmas. I'm sitting on my Swiss ball feeling like a bit of a ball with all the overeating and overdrinking that is obviously expected. I was with my family in Gloucestershire, which was lovely, beautiful day, Christmas day here. It was fun. We had a good time, and now I'm back home, and I'm far more of a fan of New Year personally. Like I get a bit down at the end of the year. It's almost like, oh, I had so much I wanted to do and I've done a lot, but I wanted to do more. And I much prefer the new year and the beginning. So I'll get quite excited next show, I'm sure. Right. Anyway, I hope you all had a happy Christmas and are looking forward to the new year. I think 2014 is going to be huge for indies in general. I'm very excited about next year. But today, anyway, on the show, I have an interview with Mel Sherrett, who writes crime novels and all kinds of things, actually, and whose book, Taunting the Dead, was one of Amazon UK's top bestsellers. She's had a number one on the whole of the Amazon store in the UK. And we talk, and bless her, yeah, she's a lovely lady, and she worked, I think, 14 years. It took her to go from her dream of being a published author to basically now she's been signed by Amazon's Thomas and Mercer. So we talk about that, but we also talk about how going indie has turned her from, you know, a writer who dreamt of this specific dream to an entrepreneur who now is a hybrid author and is loving running her own business. So it's really great to talk to Mel, and I think you'll really enjoy the interview. Other things, I have obviously been reflecting on 2013 and all the things that, because every year I do, if you're just a listener to the podcast and not on the blog, at the beginning of the year, I always post my goals for the year, my creative and, the goals that are related to the creative pen, basically my writing goals. And then at the end of the year, I revisit that and reflect on what I've actually achieved. And part of the reason I started this blog originally over five years ago now is so I could be accountable. And so I find that doing that reflection is really important for me to stay accountable to you guys, and realize that I have to, you know, I don't just do blogging and podcasting and Twitter. I actually am a writer first, and I need to keep reminding myself of that. And I look at what I've done this year, so I've pretty much done one full-length novel, Desecration, which I'm so proud of. It's one of those books, I think, that it's changed my writing quite dramatically, and it'd be really interesting. I'm really looking forward to the sequel, Delirium, because I'm wondering if I can, you know, do it again. It's one of those things when we write, isn't it? When you write something you're really pleased with, and then you think, how can I ever do that again? Anyway, so Desecration is out and getting really good reviews. Just got a 5-star top marks and one of the best books of the year on IndieReader. So I'm really happy about that. And then One Day in Budapest, which I'm also really pleased with because it was a real personal historical kind of book. Still a thriller, but about the history of Hungary and the Jews in Hungary. So that is really happy with that. And I actually made it onto the Jewish press before Christmas, which was quite exciting, on a Jewish podcast talking about that. Also, 1,000 Fiendish Angels. It's my short story series that I did with Kobo for the launch of Dan Brown's Inferno back in April. But then I re-edited it and re-released it just before Christmas. So that's really cool. I'm very happy with that. So this year I've done a full-length novel, a novella, short story series, and How to Market a Book, my non-fiction book, obviously, and that's doing well too. So I'm really happy with having sort of four products this year. I've also just put out a box set of the first three Arcane books, so that is out now. I've kind of just done that because box sets seem to be really trendy at the moment. So I've put that out there for fun, really. Other things, you know, I've changed direction on the blog and becoming more entrepreneurial. And obviously what that has also meant is for the last 3 years, I've actually won top 10 blogs for writers, which is kind of a competition that I cared a lot about. But this year, I mean, one of their criteria is that when they judge it in December, pretty much, your last 10 posts, the majority of them have to be on writing. And basically the blog doesn't count for that anymore. So I didn't win that award, but I did win one of the top 100 creative professionals in the UK by The Guardian and the Hospital Club, which is a sort of arts club in London, members only club, of which I am now a member, which is quite fun. I've also done loads of speaking. I've spoken at 20 plus events, industry events, and Berlin and Inverness and for The Guardian and Future Book, which is a big publishing conference. So it's been a really good year for my speaking. And it's funny, as I'm saying this, I'm really happy with what I've done, and I always feel a bit like this because I'm one of those chronic goal setters, always have been. My mum is as well. It's kind of one of the things we do. We're just chronic goal setters. And this year, I think I do have that real sense of comparisonitis now. I'm always honest with you guys, and I sometimes I interview people and I do feel this, why can't that happen to me? You know, why can't my book become number one on Amazon? And, you know, why can't we have the lightning rod success? And I'm sure you guys feel that too, at least I hope so. Don't think I'm the only one. But, I feel that twinge of, and I call it comparisonitis because it's not jealousy, as in I don't wish that other person didn't have it. I actually don't believe in a zero-sum game. I think we can all do that well because of the expanding world of digital globally. I think we can all do really, really well. But it's not going to happen with one book or two books or three books or four books. And I interviewed Kerry Wilkinson a few podcasts back, and if you haven't listened to that, you must listen to it, because he's so deadpan, and yet he's so inspiring because he's written 20 plus books, and he works really hard and works really hard on writing. So I've managed, you know, what I've just mentioned, you know, really one full length novel and a novella and short story series, and he's written about 15 books. Now, we all have different writing styles, so again, that's comparisonitis. It's not a good thing, but I keep reminding myself that if I want lightning to strike, then I have to write as many books as the people for whom it does strike. So look at Mel, who's going to be interviewed, whose interview is coming up next. 14 years she's been doing this, and lightning struck for her after 13 years. And Bob Mayer, who I'm going to be interviewing next year, has 52 books. You may not have even heard of Bob Mayer, but the guy's amazing and is, you know, a kind of guru for me. What's so brilliant about the indie world and indie books in general is that there are lots of people who are making amazing incomes who you've never heard of. And I think that's the real story. Hugh Howey has certainly said that the real story is not that he sold 400,000 copies in a month. It's that lots of people are selling 3,000 or 4,000 copies or 1,000 or 500. You know, that's the real story of indie. So, yeah. So if you're feeling that kind of comparisonitis thing as well, think about the long haul. This is a long haul career. This is also the point of writing, is writing. On the days where I feel I should just go back to the day job, you know, this is really hard. And, you know, to be honest, this is really hard. And, if you're doing this full time as well, it's a hard thing. Writing a book is not easy. Writing a lot of books is not easy. So, yeah, if you're feeling that as well, I hope that this is encouraging for you, because I'm, you know, going through the sort of recommitment process right now of, yep, this is what I want, you know, evaluating where I want to be in the next 5 years, 10 years, and this is the path I want to be on, this is the ladder I want to climb. I spent 13 years climbing up the wrong ladder, becoming a, you know, highly paid international freelance IT consultant, which was ultimately unrewarding and creatively destructive. So I'm really happy with the direction I'm going. I do get impatient, as I've said. So, right. I also wanted to point out a brilliant year-end post by Dean Wesley Smith at deanwesleysmith.com. And Dean and his wife, Christine Catherine Rush, are also people who I keep coming back to again and again. They are brilliant, awesome industry veterans. I think they have over 300 books between them. They run their own publishing company now. They are hybrid authors. They've been doing this for, I want to say, 40 years. I'm thinking it's over 30 years. 30 years, 40 years. They have seen everything in the industry. And here's some choice bits from Dean's article. The article is called The New World of Publishing, Some Perspective on 2013. And I will link to that in the show notes so you can see it. But essentially, Dean says, to make a career in publishing, you have to be ready for a long haul, often over decades. And this is what I discussed with my husband the other night, because when I first gave up my job in September 2011, I asked for 6 months. Oh, naivety. I asked for 6 months in order to actually start making some money. Now, I am making money. I'm certainly making money. But in terms of where I was, I'm probably making about a third of what I was making before. But then, as I said, I had been doing that career for 13 years, and I am now in year three of this new author career. So if you think about it, all of us, you know, if we all work in any job for 10 years plus, you become very valuable and you earn significant amounts of money. Whereas if you're in year three, just after the end of year two, you're never going to be making that much. So I really liked, I love to read Dean, and he said, yep, you have to be ready for a long haul, often over decades. But hey, I am 38 and I have decades, or at least I hope so, touch wood. I hope you do as well. The other thing he said is, most beginning writers who went indie 2 years ago didn't want to do that, as in didn't want to wait decades. They didn't find the gold they were promised after a ton of wasted promotion efforts and have stopped. Nothing unusual at all there. Writers starting off and then quitting was always the way it was, even when I came into publishing back in the dark ages. Nothing different. But now it's not quitting after 50 rejections, it's quitting after 3 books up and very few sales. Now, I think that comment is incredibly incisive, something like that anyway, because this is exactly true. It used to be that writers would write a couple of books, and if they got rejected, but you know, X many times, they would give up and go back to the day job. And now Dean's saying basically that if you self-publish, you know, you write and publish 3 books and then you're not selling what you expected, then people are giving up. And certainly I've heard of quite a lot of people who've just disappeared in the last year, as you know, it's not easy to make money anymore on Kindle. So the other thing Dean has said here is, during 2013, indie publishing in many ways, both paper and electronic, spread out all over the world. Now your indie books get a much wider reach than any traditional publisher can manage, which not too many people have talked about yet, but will in 2014. I'm really pleased Dean mentioned that, because of course I have been harping on about this for probably 3 or 4 months now. I've been on the bashing the, you know, the US is not over, the US is stable, the rest of the world is where the opportunity is. So I'm pretty happy that Dean has sort of picked up on that as well. And I do think that in 2014, people will talk about it a lot more. He's also said, you know, yes, just to reiterate, you do get a much bigger, wider worldwide audience when you indie publish than if you sell to traditional publishing. Right, so I really do recommend that post. It's very long and it goes into his thoughts around publishers, around agents, around writers. Definitely well worth reading. Okay, so I will talk more about my 2014 focus in the next podcast, the first one in January, when I'll also be talking to children's author Karen Inglis, who is a self-published children's author with picture books, which is something I get a lot of emails about, because I personally think it's one of the hardest things to do because picture books are so expensive, so doing it the indie route is actually really hard. Karen has also moved into doing apps for children, so very interested in talking to her about that, but I will also be talking more about my 2014 goals. I have right next to me here the fully marked up edited manuscript of public speaking for authors, creatives and other introverts. That's going to my proofreader in about a week, 10 days time, and so will be out in January for anyone who wants to get into speaking in 2014. It is aimed at, you know, authors and introverts who want to speak, and I am spending a lot of time writing Delirium, and I'm also obsessed with an idea. You get seized by an idea, and I am seized, and so I think I'm definitely struggling in my focus right now. You've probably noticed. Probably back to the raspberry gin is a good idea, and I will get my focus back in January. But yeah. Anyway, I hope you all have a fantastically happy new year, and the podcast is now sponsored by Kobo Writing Life. So here's a message from our sponsor, and I will speak to you in a couple of weeks.
Hi, this is Mark Lefebvre. I'm the director of self-publishing and author relations for Kobo. And we are very, very excited to be a sponsor of the Creative Pen podcast. Something I wanted to share with Creative Pen listeners is the fact that via Kobo Writing Life, you can set your book to free at any time for as long as you want. There's no exclusivity requests. I would advise authors, though, who are looking to set their book to free, to think about it as part of a strategy. What is your goal to set it for free? Are you looking for more readers? Are you trying to garner reviews? Or are you using this as a funnel to get people into your catalog? Come to KoboWritingLife.com, where we discuss such things, and check out the Kobo Writing Life podcast, which is also linkable from the blog. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn of the Creative Pen podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from the creativepen.com, and today I'm here with Mel Sherrett. Hi Mel.
Hi Joanna.
So just as an introduction, Mel is the author of Taunting the Dead, named as one of Amazon UK's top-selling ebooks of 2012. She's also written the Estate series of crime thrillers and has Watching Over You coming in January 2014. So Mel, it's so good to have you on the show.
So good to finally do it, Joanna.
So when we met originally, you talked about, you know, sort of pursuing the dream of the book deal, and it's taken you a long, long time. I wondered if you would just outline a bit of your journey from, you know, where you were and why you went indie, and then where you are now.
Yeah, I kind of started quite a few years ago. I originally started writing in 1999, taking it very seriously, sort of every night, every weekend, and then trying to get an agent from that. I had an agent for a couple of years, and then I moved on to another one. And throughout this time, I was writing chick lit, started off with, really. Totally different than what I did. But then I started to be a housing officer for the local housing authority. And along with that, and watching the programme Shameless, I just thought there's something here that nobody else has done yet. Nobody had actually written about housing officer, and I could tell people about the eviction procedures and how homeless people are and things like that, and play on the emotional side as well. And so I decided to write a book called, originally, my first book in the series, The Estate, was actually called The Estate. So I wrote that and managed to get myself another agent with that book, and we just couldn't get it published. Publishers were, it was in between women's fiction and crime thriller. There was no particular niche for it, so we struggled to find someone. So in the meantime, I'd written a couple more in the background, trying to wait for the deal to come through. And then we decided that because we couldn't do that, we would try with a police procedural element in with the dark, gritty writing. And I wrote Taunting the Dead, and then it was sent out to publishers, who then said it was too much like Martina Coleman's Other Plants. So I'd gone from one extreme to the other of somebody saying that, you know, you don't fit into any niche, we can't market you, into the fact that, you know, all our books are full with people like Martina Cole, so we can't go any further. And then in July 2011, the Kindle came on the market. I started to study that. I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a go at this. And with the backing of my agent, actually, at the time, I decided to take Taunting the Dead out onto the Kindle, put it out there. I didn't do any marketing. I just literally put a blog post out and just said, here it is, see if you like it. And luckily, it worked. So then, because I'd got that, because I'd done Taunting the Dead, I'd then got a few books before that I could now put out. And I did myself a little marketing strategy and put one out every 2 months, and got some really good snazzy covers designed, and they just went really well as well. So that was my self-publishing journey. So
yeah, and then just bring us up to date with what's happened more recently.
Wow, this year has just been absolutely amazing for me. Finally in, I had another agent, which is my third agent, which I'll talk about later on, but we took the book out, we actually took out Watching Over You, which is coming out next month, to London Book Fair, and I got an idea for a second psychological thriller, because really I want to write psychological thrillers. I like writing about the emotion and the fear, and I like the trepidation there rather than the police procedural element. She took Watching Over out for You, and it went out to quite a few editors. And before anybody could say anything, Amazon Publishing came along, Thomas and Mercer, and they were just so responsive, but also they were saying what they could do with Taunting the Dead. Now, to me, Taunting the Dead was probably a book that was literally dead in the water, because it had been out for 2 years. You know, I'd done tremendously well with it. It had never been in paperback, though, but I didn't think traditional publishers would be interested in it. So it was the deal that sealed it for me. They made me a preemptive offer, and then we just took everybody else off the table and went with them, and it's been incredible. It's been a real good experience.
Oh, brilliant. And I know you can't talk about that contract, so I won't even ask you. But it's so, I mean, from your dream, like 12 years ago, 14 years ago, whatever it was you mentioned, when you started on this, none of the world right now was happening. I mean, as in Amazon, it wasn't a publishing company. So do you feel like this is, you know, the culmination of that dream for the last 14 years? Or do you think your dream has actually changed?
I think my dream has actually changed. Oh, I say it's definitely changed with the times. I'm not quite sure if I had got a traditional deal a couple of years ago with Taunting the Dead, whether I would be sitting here now. And I also feel that a lot of people, when I took out Taunting the Dead, and then I still wanted a traditional deal, I never made it a secret, I always wanted the traditional deal. People would sometimes say to me, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't do both. And actually now I can, and it's really liberating to feel like people are asking me, oh, you're a hybrid author. Yeah, it's great. I can now self-publish my own books at the side of the traditionally published deals, no problem whatsoever. Who would have heard of that 2 years ago? It just was never anywhere that we would think that we would be able to go that far with it. And now I can still be my own boss. I can publish my own books when I want to, but also I've got the backing of a team and a fantastic agent now, and an editor, which has been wonderful for me to work with an editor. So I do feel like I have had my cake and eat it, and I do feel there's a lot of icing on the top of the cherry as well.
Well, no, and I love that. And I actually think that I see this year, in this year, 2013, we have seen the dream become, I want to be a hybrid author. You know, that seems to be what people want now. You know, I want to be Hugh Howey. You know, that rather
we all want to be Hugh Howey.
We all want to be Hugh.
Yeah.
But
we all want to meet Hugh.
Yeah, that does seem to be now, well, certainly for me and people who are in the industry, you know, who are savvy authors with a few books, that does seem to be the thing, doesn't it? Do you hear of anyone who just wants traditional anymore?
Yeah, I do think there's a few out there. I'm not quite sure how there'll be another 2 years, because if you remember 2 years ago when we first started, I remember going to Harrogate Crown Festival 2 years ago, and there'd been a massive big talk on ebooks and saying, why are they all a half the price of a cup of tea and they're all at 99 pence and they, you know, they're destroying, I think it was when they were 20 pence at the time, they were destroying everything. And I sat there in the audience and I came away so disheartened, thinking everybody thinks I can't sell books, I'm selling them at 99 pence because of this. And now look at the market. Every publisher and every author out there is realising the value of cheap and cheerful products to get your other products up and running. So it's been a completely whole new ball game, and there's a lot of competition out there now, definitely. But for me sitting there now 2 years, you know, 2 years ago, and now to think what it's going to be like in another 2 years, a lot of these authors now who are traditionally published will be hybrid. I'm convinced about it. You can do a lot more and a lot quicker and work at your own pace as well. And I just feel like at the moment, this past year has just completely turned me into a businesswoman. I would never have thought that I would plan everything, project planning, project management, go to see accountants and all sorts of things that have been happening in the background. I never would have thought that would happen. So for me, I have got a business now, and it is amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because I've just written down products, my own boss, and competition, all of which are words that are more entrepreneurial than the author that you were back, you know, a few years ago, where it was all about, you know, just the writing. So now, you know, I've kind of changed the focus of my site now into really, because I think this is where we're going now. We're going into author entrepreneur as reality. So tell us a bit more about your behind the scenes, and we'll come back to your writing process, but I'm actually interested on the business processes. So you have an agent, you have an editor, but what are the other things that you do to run your business now?
Well, for the past few weeks, I've been getting all my books onto Create Space in print. I finally got all my estate series out. They were just being published at the moment, so that's been a real big thing for me to do. I'm having my own stationery printed. I've actually set up my own business now to run the company through. It's called Blood Red Books. So, which I think depicts me perfectly. I would never have thought that I would be doing anything like I'm doing now. I'm being contacted by newspapers all the time. I have my own column in my local newspaper. I've just been fundraising this week. I've opened a book fair, for goodness sake. It's absolutely fantastic in the city. Everybody's just so welcoming. But you know, you talk about, yeah, entrepreneurial. I've said yes to so many things this year, Joanna, that I never would have dared to say before. And I do, you know, hand on heart, think that if I had got that traditional book deal 2 years ago, I wouldn't have done much of this. I would have probably published the books. I would have sat back, perhaps not thinking about it. I certainly would have continued to blog, because I do love to blog, and I do think that's my free form of marketing. But I do a lot in the background for other writers. I'm mentoring 2 or 3 writers at the moment, and these are the things that people don't see, that we do literally work from the minute we get up until we go to bed, and constantly working. The writing probably 2 or 3 hours a day. The rest of it is you know, interacting with people, talking to my agent, talking to my publisher, cover design, all sorts of things like that, and project management. I now sit down once a month and manage what I need to do for the rest of the month to make sure that everything gets out on time. I just don't think a couple of years back I would never dream of anything like that.
No, it's great, and it's great we're talking about this because I think this is the reality of the modern writer's life. When you say you're project managing things, how are you doing that? What are the tools that you're using? Is it just spreadsheets or calendar, or how are you managing your time, like, you know, on a day-to-day basis and going forwards?
Yeah, I have a calendar. I have a reminder of a list, a to-do list to do every day, and if I'm drafting, I do a couple of hours writing every morning, and then I can get on. Sometimes it can take, I mean, you probably know yourself, 2 or 3 hours maybe just to catch up on emails. Mm. It is, the emails that come in are phenomenal, you know, business-wise, and then all of a sudden I'll have one in and, you know, just ping in and say, would you like to do this? And would you like to do this? And you think, oh my gosh, shouldn't you go off? And you have to calm yourself back down again and think, yes, you need to work first. It's been a real learning curve, I think. And I think next year, I'm probably going to be doing the opposite to you. I'm going to be sitting back and doing more writing next year. Mm. Because this year has been completely taken over by me marketing, my getting my deal, and everybody asking me about it, you know, and making sure that for the past 3 months before the books came out, I've worked with some fantastic editors and had, you know, you talk about traditional deals where they don't have any input. I have the total opposite. I have literally had, for watching over you, I have literally had maybe 20, 30 covers designed until we got to the final one, because we wanted something that would wow people and we just couldn't get what we wanted. I had 8 different covers for Taunting the Dead, and I've worked with copy editors. So for 3 months of this year, literally, I just had to project manage the whole thing to make sure that I got the edits done in time for them, as well as everything else coming in. Sometimes you just have to think, okay, everything else needs to wait for a moment, and then you get yourself back up on track and start again. So yeah, to-do lists every day. Every Friday afternoon I sit down and I figure out what I need to do for the rest of the week, for the following week, and plan in the you know, like for instance when we're doing the Create Space paperbacks, I've had to plan in that the inside is ready and the covers are being done while I'm doing inside, you know, things like that. So as it's all done on a certain date, I wanted it all done by Christmas. Didn't think I was going to get it all done by Christmas. I decided I needed to get 2 books out. I was deciding to get one out before Christmas and then one out at the end of January. And I have actually managed to do the 2. I'm really quite astounded that I have. But I think sometimes in your mind, you work towards goals and you get there. Mm. And you don't know how you do it. And it might be the last minute. I really panic sometimes, but they do work out on time.
No, that's great. And I'm at the moment planning, you know, 2014. And you talk there about the writing being the most important thing, which is, you know, for all of us. And so I'm really planning my production schedule, and I love calling it a production schedule, because that's like, yes, I have to. And you talk about deadlines there, you have to have certain things. So what does your production schedule look like for next year? You know, how many books are you planning to get out there?
Yeah, we do talk so far in advance as well, don't we? And I do like the way you say production, because it is a business and people forget that it's a business. They just think that, you know, writing's always looked at as we can't make money out of it, Joanna. And I feel that, you know, we should be embracing the fact that we are 2 women here sitting here making money out of something that we love doing. And that's absolutely fantastic. So if I can give anybody else the motivation to do it, then that's absolutely wonderful. Schedule for next year, I am just finishing, struggling to finish, should I say. I'm doing the follow-up to Taunting the Dead, which is going to be called Follow the Leader. That's the first time I've ever said the title out loud. So yeah. I'm writing that one now, hoping to get that one out next year. And I have another psychological thriller as well, that's going to be written next year. And I think, I can't make my mind up at the moment whether to go for a full-length novel for the Estate Series Book 4, which I had planned out for quite some time now, or Do Like Yourself and Do Some Novellas. Can't quite figure out which way is the way to go yet, but it just depends on how well Watching Over You does, I suppose. So
so that's 2 or 3 there, and you know, and I know people always want to know, and you talked a bit about planning. So what is the writing process for the books?
Sometimes people say to me, I can't believe how quick you write, but I do write a lot very, very quickly. When I'm doing my first drafts, it's probably 6 to 8 weeks, 3 to 4,000 words a day. But I do allow myself to write a load of twallop sometimes, Joanna, to get the words out right. I like editing. So my first draft is literally 6 weeks, and then probably aim for 15 to 20,000 words a week. I do plan for about a month before, so I have a beginning, a middle and an end, and I know what my characters are doing. I've probably lived with the characters like every other author has for quite a few months beforehand. And then once I've got that first draft down, I probably do exactly the same on the second draft. And then the third draft is the one where I start putting in all the description, which is really, really daft, as, you know, probably to some writers, but I can't write description. I'm not very good at it. So I like to get all the gritty stuff out of the way first, get all the planning out of the way, all the twists and turns. And then I go back on the third one and completely layer it. And I layer it with one layer of fear, a layer of emotion, and a layer of description.
Great you say this, because I have this discussion all the time with people. I write sparse, so I write very sparse, and then I have to add layers like you do.
Yes.
I'm so thrilled you said that, because you know, it's Stephen King who ruined it for everyone, because he says every time you do another draft, you should take away 10%, whereas I have to add 10%.
Yeah.
Yay!
Definitely.
Oh, I'm so glad we discussed that. I mean, we're all different, but that just shows you, doesn't it, that sometimes you have to, and I'm great at description, but I'm not so good at like dialogue, and you know, so
I love dialogue. I sometimes write whole scenes just in dialogue and then go back afterwards on the next draft, because I just love the dialogue. Yeah, I do.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny. You know, maybe we should do a collaboration.
Yeah, that would be good, Joanna.
That would be fun. Right, we'll park that one. That was behind the scenes. Right, I want to come back on a couple of things. So just on the agents, because I split up with my first agent this year, and I made the point when I did that it wasn't a big deal, as in a lot of people split up with agents. So can you just talk briefly about your agenting experience and what that means nowadays?
Yeah, I guess I had my first agent in 2004, and I worked with her for 2.5 years, and that was on the women's fiction that I was doing. And the experience wasn't a very good experience, because I was on my own, really, and sometimes I'd be waiting 3 or 4 months for her to get back to me. I worked on the same book for that whole 2.5 years, and I must have done about 8 rewrites. So when you talk about Stephen King there, yeah, I just was going over and over and over old ground, really. And then we just got to the stage where she said, oh, yes, we're going to go for a publisher. And I thought, oh, this is it, this is finally it. And then, lo and behold, 2 months later, she'd been working with me to copy edit it. She retired. And she just left me in the air. She just emailed me out the blue and just said, you know, I'm thinking of retiring. Well, I am retiring. I'm only keeping clients on that path for 10 years. And, you know, couldn't even help me to get another agent because she didn't know who to put me with. So I literally didn't write for a year. I completely just thought, well, that's it. There's you know, she's not retired. She is. She just doesn't
she's
want
lying.
Me. Not good enough. Yeah. So, and then I managed to pick myself up again. And that was probably 2008. And that was when I was blogging then and meeting a few people. And I started on Twitter, I think, about 2009. So it was just a bit before that. And I met my second agent. And that was with Curtis Brown. She's a lovely agent, Sheila Crowley. And I was with her for 3.5 years. And we, like I said, we, you know, the whole saga behind that, we tried to get some deals, and then it was go away and write another one, see if we can get a deal with that one. And then, I don't know, I just felt like I'd become a bit of a burden. I don't think I did, but I did feel that way. And I just felt, with the Kindle market coming out in the December when I took the book out, I did it with her blessing. It was great. And by March time, I was in the top of the charts and thinking that I want to bring the estate series out. And I didn't think that she might have been responsible for it, but I didn't feel like I wanted to go for a traditional deal until I tried myself, to be fair. And yes, it could have, you know, I could have fell back on it, but I just wanted to get these three books out and did myself a strategy. And it was a hard decision to make, but it was, you know, it was the right decision in the end. And December sorry, not December, 2013, I took out the three estate books, and I took them out in every 2 months in July, I think about October and December. And by the December, when the third book was just about to go out, I had 5 agents contact me, which was really, really good. So I met with 3 of them. And I had 2 really, really close ones, and I picked one called Madeline Milburn. And the reason I picked her, although the other one, to be fair, was exactly the same, she had the same energy as me. I met her for 3 hours, and she just wanted to take me to another level, and she wanted to get me the book deal that she thought I deserved, if that doesn't sound too big-headed. Mm. But she was very, very open to hybrid authors. She was very, very open to what was going on. She was very, very savvy with ebooks. And the one particular thing I liked about her was that she'd read every single book of mine before she'd come and found me. And she sent me an email one afternoon and said, you know, I've been looking at your website for hours. So when you're talking about websites and having a presence there, that's what you need it for. That's how people get to know you. And from there, I met her. And yeah, I signed up with her a week later. And, you know, what was it, 3 months later, 3-4 months later, she gave me the book deal that I wanted, and that was incredible. And she's always there for me, Madeline. She's very much, she is my business partner, and I'm not quite sure, even, you know, it does sound silly, but I don't think I would have done that a couple of years ago. Now I know I can hold my own, and I speak to her on a level where she, I understand my side of the business and she understands hers, and we work really well together doing that.
And that, it's so fantastic to hear that, because I think that the role of agents has changed, and you've clearly found an agent who's forward thinking. Some of them are still stuck in their own days, but this is what people should be looking for, is agents who are business partners. And I would definitely have another agent. You know, it's just you have to find that right person. So I'm really glad of that. So I wanted to just come back on your blog, and you've talked about marketing strategy. So, and because right now there's a lot of backlash, I feel, against blogging. Everyone's like, well, if you're going to write 1,000 words a day, it should be on your fiction or whatever, or your book, not on your blog. So what has your blog done for you, your high heels and book deals? What does your blog do for you, and why do you still love blogging?
Well, for me, I always started out my platform on a blog. I blogged before I did high heels and book deals on a blog called I'll Plate Author. And that's how I first started off. But it was the discipline of writing that I liked about a blog post. I always made it about 300 to 400 words. I always tried to make it interesting, and it was a way of going around to find other writers as well at the time. When blogging very first started, we were all into commenting and etc., because Twitter wasn't around then. So I made quite a few friends doing that first. But it was, to me, when I started High Heels and Book Deals, I wanted a savvy name. I'm very well known for my high heels, and obviously I couldn't get a book deal. So High Heels and Book Deals was absolutely wonderful. But I wanted a niche that would bring an audience to me by finding somebody else. That was basically High Heels, which was really, really good. So I used to do an interview called A Chat With and the particular author, give them a list of questions, and at the end it would be, what's your poison, high heels or flats? Majority of them were flats, actually, but I had some great shoes on that blog, and everybody would send them. But the thing with that then, I got to know an author, B, I got to know their PR assistant, C, I could then put the blog post out on Twitter, and then without me even doing anything, then it was retweeted by the author, by the PR, by the publicist. It was absolutely fantastic, and it was two-way. When I first started off, I got a lot of books to give away, so people were coming back that way, and then I started to do book reviewing for the same authors. And so when it came to my time to actually put my book out, I got a really valuable network of friends there who, you know, I've heard people say, oh, you know, you must have done a lot of retweeting and you know, well, people, that's what you're saying, you buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. No, I didn't. I didn't do any retweeting. They retweeted for me because I'd done the same for them, and it was great. I didn't ask anybody. I still don't. I still get a bit nervous about it now when I want somebody to retweet something. But I think through that, and actually going to some of the crime writing festivals and then meeting some of these people face to face, that was my free PR. So when I wanted to put my book out, they were all there for me, which was really, really good. I still do write on my blog now. I don't do it as much now because I don't find the time to do it, really, to be fair. And I'm still at the moment on my blog trying to find a little niche that I want to write about. I'm thinking at the moment that I'm going to start writing about my own city, because if my books are going to go into the US, maybe, possibly, then we are a little known city in the Midlands. And the potteries are our big thing, so why not write about that? And I thought maybe I could do something that way. So for me, I do like my blogging, and I actually sit down and write. And yeah, I can mess about a bit sometimes on there, but it is, if you look at the posts that I put out, they're quite emotional posts, and that's the way I write. And if people read the blog and then they like that and they buy the book, and that's my job done.
Yeah, and I think everything you've said is my secret as well, and you know, is one, you know, talk to other people and make relationships. You know, the podcast, the whole point of my podcast, of which we're on like 173, I think our episode will be, is people I've spent time with, you know, like this. And you know, this is a connection, right, when you spend time with people. And so that's relationships. I still think people don't get it, that relationships are still the heart of the internet, right?
Absolutely, it's still networking at the end of the day. It's just that you do it online, and then when you go to a certain event and you meet all these people, you feel like you've known them for years anyway, so it's just one big
gap. Kind of have.
Fantastic. Yeah,
it is. And then I also think generosity and social karma are kind of the big things I talk about too. By blogging about other people, by promoting other people's books for years, you then have earned the right to get attention for your own books.
Yeah,
so
you,
I mean, did anyone teach you that, or did you just do it naturally?
No, I think that was the writer in me. I think I always wanted to do a bit of writing, you know, every day. I don't probably sit down when people say, oh, you should write 500 words a day or 1,000 words a day. Maybe that was my way of blogging. You know, by doing it on the blog, I would sit down and give myself a bit of discipline to do it that way. I've always enjoyed blogging, but I never had a marketing experience. I never had marketing experience, never in my job or anything like that. And I kind of get quite annoyed when they say the whole thing behind anybody making success of a book is because they've been marketing savvy. It's not. It's just because, like you say, you give a lot, you get a lot back, and they're the people that help you eventually to, you know, to turn that book around. And it's success of the book probably started off with, because a lot of the people who looked at my book had followed me for years and years and years, and then went and bought the book and actually quite liked it, and then reviewed it for me, which was great. So, you know, that's probably where my ball started rolling with the you know, the word of mouth taunting the dead.
Absolutely right. We are kind of at the end, so tell us a bit more about Watching Over You, coming out in January 2014.
Well, I have to say, it's my most scariest book, but it's the best thing I've ever had fun writing. My best friend is really, really worried about my mind.
Oh, everyone's because, worried about mine too. You know, you're
Watching Over You, it's basically, I've always liked the old films in the 80s, like Single White Female, Fatal Attraction, The Hand That Rocked the Cradle, that type of thing. So I wanted to write something similar to that. But I wanted to choose a different addiction as well, because I always do quite a lot of alcohols and drugs and things like that in the books that I write about. Because I'm a gritty writer and a very smutty writer, I suppose, I decided to make the main character a sex addict. and basically, Ella has had not a very good childhood, very, very damaged, and I wanted to show a relationship between a woman falling in love with somebody else and a woman falling apart because of it. So one part of the book, you have Ali, very, very damaged, but all she really wants is a friend. And then you have female Charlie, who comes along. They're both in the 30s. Charlie lost her husband a couple of years back, lost a baby as a result of it as well at the time, and wants to move out of the family home and moves into the flat that Ella owns. Ella lives above here, and thinks that the friendship that they start to form is okay, and clearly it isn't, and she starts stalking her and following her around, and she's damage. That's all I'm going to say about that.
So it's, I mean, and I've read a couple of your books, and they are, there's a lot of, you know, there's some murders going on, a lot of violence. And so just before we finish, I'm really interested, because everyone says the same thing about, you know, to me, oh, you seem such a nice person. Look, you know, you and me both, look at us all nice and smiley, you know, little cheeky grins. So where do we get this stuff from?
I've no idea, but what I do think I need to stop doing is apologising every time I talk to somebody and saying, oh, my book's full of sex, violence and murder. I'm sure Martina Cole never says that she meets any of her fans. But I don't really know. I think for me, mainly because I started working on an estate and could see how down and how low people could get, and a lot of my books are right. They are, the characters are very low to start off with, and not in very, very good situations. But I'm hoping by the end of the book that the hope has come around, and maybe they do have a good ending, or maybe they don't. But there's always that emotional feel that, you know, you want them to do better, and you do try and empathise with them. With Watching Over You, I really wanted everybody to kind of be really scared of Ali, but also really feel really, really sorry for it. And from the reviews that have come in so far, it's been working really well. Some of the violence scenes, Joanna, I don't know where I write them. I have no idea where they come from. But touching on a point here at the moment, since Taunting the Dead's gone back out on sale and been republished with Thomas and Mercy, I've had a couple that have 2-star reviews, and they're both from guys. So I started, funnily enough, the other day, having a look through some of my reviews to see whether I could, you know, guess whether they're male or female. Now, I've got over 500 reviews on all the books, and 83% of them are 5 and 4 stars, which is great. But some of the 2-star ones, the ones that always get you, they are, majority of them are male. And so they can't understand the actual attraction between the police officer and the main suspect. And they don't really understand how a professional woman would get that. Well, let me tell you, I've had lots of emails of female cops who actually really understand that sexual attraction. So
like
you must need something like that. So maybe, you know, maybe women do like crime more, and maybe that's why we write it, and we can understand more why there's more female authors out there doing it. We all want justice. To pinch a line from Harrogate Crime Festival, somebody said that we read crime books because we want justice at the end of it, and that to me just completely summed it up. Although you want to throw everything you can at your character, you still want them to come out, you know, happy at the end, or some sort of fairly happy ending. Yeah.
Fantastic, Mel. So where can people find you and your books online?
I'm online at www.melsherritt.co.uk, or you can always find me on Amazon.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mel. That was great.
Thank you. You're welcome, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen, or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.